You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4pm on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time may contain audio descriptions of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and discussion of deaths in custody. I'm Marissa and I will be with you for the next hour. On today's show, we will be bringing you an extended interview with Denham Sadler from Liberty Victoria's Rights Advocacy Project, RAP, to talk about a new report which raises significant human rights concerns with Victoria Police search powers and calls for urgent reforms. Then we will talk with Brett Collins, Coordinator of Justice Action, who will update us on Corrections Bangkok Conference, particularly as follow-up after the Youth Justice Senate inquiry and getting computers into the 865 children in detention, 63% of whom are Indigenous. A new report by Liberty Victoria's Rights Advocacy Project has identified major human rights concerns with Victoria Police's stop and search powers around the ability to conduct no reason searches of individuals. The report calls for major reforms of these powers to better protect the human rights of Victorians and urges the Victorian Parliament to reject the current proposal to expand these abilities. The report, Unreasonable Grounds, Reforming Victoria's Police Stop and Search Powers, is based on 2 years of research and consultations with a range of legal and advocacy organisations, including First Nations organisations, which work alongside traditionally over-policed communities. It focuses on the ability of Victoria Police to search individuals without having reasonable grounds or a warrant to do so through designated search areas, consent searches and firearm prohibition orders. These searches are a major encroachment on the basic human rights of Victorians. And the report urges the state government to reform these powers to vastly restrict their usage and reject any proposal and instead expand them. Joining us on the show, we have Denham Sadler from Liberty Victoria's RAP. Denham is a freelance writer with a focus on criminal justice reform and prison. He is a contributor to About Time, Australia's national prison newspaper, and a number of other publications. And this is a continuation of the discussion that we were having last Monday with ILO from Centre Against Racial Profiling. Hello, Denham. Welcome to the program.
The Victorian State Government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including a ban on wearing protective masks, restrictions on symbols of resistance, including flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition, Wednesday, 19th of March, 5:30 p.m. State Parliament. That's Wednesday, 19th of March, State Parliament, 5:30 p.m. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
And it's approximately 4:05 and you've just tuned in to the Do and Time show. Apology to listeners for any technical difficulties. I'm doing the show remotely from home today and it's a different format. But I wanted to welcome Denham to the program. Hello, Denham. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
It's lovely to have you. Now, Denham, I'm not sure if you heard the introduction where I spoke about the report that's written by RAP. Would you be able to...
No, I did hear it, yeah.
I'm sorry?
I was able to hear it, yeah.
That's okay. Would you just be able to talk to us about RAP and also the report and what actually led up to it? And perhaps you could just speak up just for a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I've been involved. We've been looking at this report for more than 2 years and it's part of Liberty Victoria's Rights Advocacy Project. So it involves a really diverse group of people. It's often lawyers, but I'm coming from a journalism background, working on a research project, looking at some sort of human rights issue across that time and usually producing a report with policy recommendations, but it can be in another form as well. And I was in the criminal justice team and we are focusing on Victoria Police's stop and search powers. And we pretty early on in the process worked out that we wanted to look at kind of the ability for police to conduct these searches on individuals without having reasonable grounds. I think kind of the general assumption kind of a normal person would have about the searches is the police usually have to have some sort of reasonable grounds to do that. It is a pretty significant curtailment of your human rights. But there are increasingly a lot of ways that you can be searched without any grounds at all. And we kind of looked at that through consultation with the groups you talked about in the intro. We kind of zeroed in on that as a big issue where it leaves a lot of room up for kind of racialized policing and further policing of groups that are already targeted in those sort of ways already. So we kind of zeroed in into different ways police have that power, and across the more than 2 years looking into it, we came up with a lot of recommendations and based on the concerns that we'd found about these powers.
And the plan, which was announced by the state government late last year, that is the proposed legislation, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so that's about one of the kind of three main things we looked in the report is the designated search area powers. So that's basically the police can designate a certain area. It's often a train station or a shopping centre, and this is a search area typically for about 12 or 24 hours where they can search anyone who happens to be in that area without any reasonable grounds. And the powers were introduced and kind of the main reasoning was for knife crime and for weapons, but obviously if they search you and find drugs or something, you can face consequences of that as well. So we've had significant concerns with that. But throughout the time we were writing it, there was also a proposal from the Vic government to expand it and take it even further. So that expansion would be to double the amount of time that you can designate a certain zone and changes to the notice period. So there are requirements for the government or Victoria Police to notify the public about when they're going to designate a certain area. It's already pretty secretive anyway, I'd say. The notification has to be in the government gazette, and I think most people wouldn't know what that is or where to find it. It's not the most public thing ever, but often you hear about these designated areas through kind of advocacy groups posting about it and the impact it might have on vulnerable groups, because they're also used a lot on protests. And we're actually seeing there's a designated area around where the 3CR studio is in Collingwood, Abbotsford and Richmond on Wednesday. So it's pretty relevant at the moment.
What time is that going to be on Wednesday?
It's Wednesday afternoon. So I believe it's all afternoon, so from about 12 p.m. to midnight. And I'm not actually sure. It's really often around a major event or
sure.
protest, but I'm not sure what that would be. I wasn't able to find anything that's on that Wednesday afternoon. I'm not too sure what it's based around.
Well, that's really interesting because I think in the future, what it looks like is that the Allen government may be providing or making a law where there may be less notices and where it will be a lot more secretive where those designated areas will be.
Yeah, that's one main part of those reforms that are in Parliament is kind of lessening the requirements around the criteria to designate a search area and the actual notice period behind them as well.
So basically the report has found that the designated search area powers are ineffective. Can you tell us how it's ineffective? What does the research say?
Yeah, we found, so throughout the process, we made a number of attempts to get information on the search power, so information on how many searches were conducted, what objects and other things were found, and kind of refer to that as kind of a hit rate, so what, how many searches actually resulted in someone with, say, a knife being found. And there's really not, that's one of our other recommendations is around data transparency, because there's really not much reporting around this, but we were able to get some information through a Freedom of Information request after quite a long time. And through that, we found that, so it was from January 2021 to January 2023, there were 61 of these designated search areas made. And within those areas, there were 19,000 searches undertaken in them. And 252 of these searches resulted in an object found. So there's no further detail on what that object was and how serious to say weapon or drug it was, but that's a hit rate of just over 1%. So in the report, we argue that isn't showing success enough for how significant that infringement is on the more than 18,000 people who were searched for no result. And even more recently, the police put out information. They had a designated search area at a big shopping centre, and they said they conducted more than 200 searches, and one of those searches found a pocket knife on a teenager, and that was the only hit for a search. And so that's a success rate of even less than 1% of the data we found. So I think the success rate for actually finding things isn't enough to justify the human rights curtailment that these involve.
Can you comment on racial profiling and over-policed communities?
Absolutely. So that was kind of the main reason, I suppose, we zeroed in on the unreasonable grounds kind of theme of the report and the ability to conduct searches without reasonable grounds, because we saw it as kind of just taking away one extra check that could help stamp out kind of racialized policing. I think it's just giving more discretion to police, and we know we've seen lots of evidence that results in specific groups being targeted, and that was a big thing that stood out through the groups that we talked about and kind of the Victorian Aboriginal Legal Service and a lot of other groups that work a lot with the African community in Victoria and all these groups that are targeted by police. They say that as soon as there's kind of more power to search people at the discretion of police, it's always these groups that end up getting targeted.
And some of this data was actually obtained under a Freedom of Information request as part of this report. Is that right?
Absolutely, yeah. That was the designated search data that I mentioned was through their FOI eventually, yeah.
So it's really interesting. I mean, it beggars belief, doesn't it? Because, I mean, racial profiling can easily be part of vulnerability in communities, and that would include, wouldn't it, Africans, people of colour and Indigenous communities?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and if you look at kind of the actual areas, which we have in the report as well, the council areas that are getting designated, it's a lot of lower socioeconomic areas and a lot of areas that are home to kind of more groups that are typically targeted as well.
Can you talk about the Charter of Human Rights and how that's quite incompatible with the bill? And indeed, I think that the state government has already conceded, hasn't it, that the bill is incompatible?
They have. So under the Victorian Charter, for every piece of legislation that the government passes or puts into Parliament, they have to table what's called a statement of compatibility. So that's basically saying how this law meets the human rights that are laid out in our Charter. And for these designated search area powers, when they got introduced to Parliament, they had to just admit that some elements were incompatible. And the way the Charter works, that doesn't mean the law can't be passed. The government basically just has to admit that some of it isn't incompatible, and they would argue that the risk to the community and knife crime and that sort of thing justify it. But I think it says a lot when they can't say that it works within their own Charter that they support it. They say it's incompatible with it.
I mean, don't really have a charter, do we?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of arguments around how the the power of the charter, I suppose. And yeah, what's the point of it there if you can bypass it? I think there's something to be say that it allows us to say that, to at least they have to say they think it's incompatible. But yeah, I think there's a lot of arguments around giving a bit more teeth to those human rights encompassed in them.
And what's this bizarre thing here? I'm just having a look at the report. I don't know, Jen Hamm, if you could explain this to me. But the report apparently looks at the firearm prohibition orders, which is a scheme meant to target organised crime groups and terrorists. But that's been found to impact people with no connections to these groups and no connections to firearms. Is that right?
Yeah, I was fascinated about these orders because I hadn't heard of them either until they came up in quite a few of our consultations with some of the groups, particularly the law firms we were talking to, raised this as a pretty serious issue. So basically, it's a police power. They can put a firearm prohibition order on someone. It can be someone as young as 14 as well. It doesn't have to be an adult. And it's meant to be, well, when they introduce the power, they kind of say it's about terrorism, it's about organised crime, like you say. But the actual criteria isn't quite that strict. So the criteria just kind of says they have to consider the criminal history, the behaviour and the threat to the public. There's actually not even a requirement that they've got a history with a gun or own a gun. But once you have one of these orders on you, there are restrictions around firearms, but there's also gives huge powers to the police to search you at any time and search your house and search your car. And probably most troubling, it also gives them power to search anyone that might be in the company of the person with the order. So you might happen to be with someone, you might even not know they have the order, and then you can be searched by the police without any other grounds just because you're in there. Company. And we've heard a lot from the people we consulted with about issues that it's another way for police to kind of search the people they usually want to search and have these extra powers, and they don't have to prove reasonable grounds. And we've heard a lot of stories been placed on people that certainly aren't kind of the high level offenders that the powers were meant to be targeting.
So in case people have just tuned in, this is the Doing Time show and you're listening to an interview with Denham Sadler from Liberty Victoria Rep. And it's approximately 4:15. So I'm wondering, Denham, and thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's lovely to have you, actually, so that you can just talk about these powers, because it really is quite frightening, isn't it?
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. I love the show, and yeah, it's great to be able to talk about the report.
Can you specifically talk about some of the recommendations in the report?
Definitely. So we've made a lot of pretty sweeping recommendations that would, if implemented, would go a long way to kind of stripping the police of that power to search without having the reasonable grounds. And the top ones that we're most pushing for are kind of the complete scrapping of the designated search area powers. But cognizant that might not happen, there might not be political will for that. There's also a lot of recommendations to tighten their use and improve transparency around them. So at least there's a bit more kind of criteria around their actual use. And then similar for firearm prohibition orders, we want them to be restricted a lot more to the groups that they say they want to target with them anyway, so, and to require the individual to actually have a history with a firearm, at least to have these placed on them. And we're pushing to get rid of the provision that allows for the search of people that might happen to just be in the company of the individual as well. And the other aspect of the report that I haven't touched on yet is consent searches. So aside from all of this, if police stop someone in the street and ask for their consent and obtain it, they can search them. So it kind of takes away the need for any other power to do it. And there's a lot of issues. This is raised by nearly every group we talk to around whether you can actually ever give full consent to police. There's obviously big power imbalances, especially when it comes to groups that are over-policed already. So we're pushing for that ability to be removed. So consent alone can't justify search, and that's not a novel approach. There's some states in the US and in UK that don't allow it as well. So there are high-level reforms, and we do have other recommendations below them if we can't get through with the top-line ones.
And what about, I don't know, I've just had a look at the report again. It doesn't really go into protest, does it?
Not hugely, no. I think we do touch on it with the designated search areas because they have been definitely used in the areas where a protest will be, and there's big concerns around that, but not specifically, but it's definitely interrelated in terms of using some of these powers to target people at protests that we have seen recently in Victoria?
Look, it's actually a terrible thing, really, because you know, a lot of protest situations actually will have vulnerable communities in those protests. So not only will they be racially profiled, but there'll be a double thing in that their right to protest will also be counteracted as well.
Absolutely, yeah, it's a huge impact on free speech and, yeah, the right to kind of participate in these protests if there's kind of that culture of fear that you're going to be stopped and searched and, yeah, something that can be highly traumatic for some of these groups.
Thank you, Dylan. So I'm wondering if we could just go full circle in case, you know, new listeners have just tuned in. Could you just give the title of the report again, where it's from, and just summarise it as to what the aims and objectives of that report is?
Absolutely. So the report, and I'm one of the members, there were three of us who completed the project, and I'm one of the members. It's Liberty Victoria's Rights Advocacy Project, and our report is called Unreasonable Grounds, Reforming Victoria Police's Stop and Search Powers. That it's looking at all the ways that Victoria Police can conduct searches without reasonable grounds and investigating ways to reform that and kind of protect human rights a bit more around these searches. It looks a lot about the impact of these searches on individuals and particularly vulnerable groups in society and ways to kind of get a bit stricter guidelines around how they're conducted and particularly around data access as well. Like, a lot of countries have better access to data about searches and the potential for racialized searching as well that Australia just doesn't have.
And really there's no transparency, is there, really?
No, I think we found we initially tried to do FOI requests for much more substantial data, and we got charged. It was about $3,000, I think, which just we don't have the budget for that. And then a lot of that information we're requesting is information I can go online and get for free in the UK right now. Like, there is pretty poor access to data in Victoria in terms of all the use of these police powers.
That's really, I mean, I just find that to be really difficult. I mean, we already have police powers. Might not there be a better way to handle the situation and funnel more money into better programs for young people and for marginalised communities?
Definitely, yeah. I think that could be used across the criminal justice space, I think, with prisons and everything else as well. Yeah, I think if you fund the basic things that government should be funding in terms of healthcare and housing, you kind of remove the need all these search powers and you wouldn't see some of the crimes that they're trying to target instead of kind of helping the people that might be doing it. So, yeah, I think you could say that across the board for a lot of these policies.
And also, it goes without saying that the whole process of police searches is traumatising for an individual, particularly those who are frequently targeted by policing practices for reasons influenced by subjective biases such as race and socioeconomic status. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, we've heard repeatedly through all the groups we spoke with, it can have just such a huge impact on people, particularly young people. The kind of the lawyers we talked to, we talked to Elo, who you mentioned in the intro, we talked to him for the report.
Yeah,
I think the people working with younger people that are targeted by police a lot, it has just such a huge impact on them, and often in our studies that have found that the kind of over-policing of certain groups can just lead to more crimes being committed. Like, I think it can have a really big impact on people, and also you're talking about potentially asylum seekers being targeted and kind of being targeted by police can be highly traumatic for them, and we know how much kind of First Nations people are targeted with these powers as well, that I think, yeah, it can have just a devastating impact to be continually targeted like that.
And all this stuff that we're talking about, you know, with the subjective biases, that's enshrined in the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities Act 2006, Vic, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, it is, yeah.
Well, it's been great having you, Denham. Are there any final comments that you want to make in conclusion?
I don't think so. Thanks very much for having me on. And I think, yeah, just if you search Rights Advocacy Project, you'll be able to find the report and, have a read for anyone that's interested in it. But, no, we really appreciate it. Me and the team really appreciate you having us on and giving us a chance to talk about the report.
Can you just direct listeners to the website?
Absolutely. So I will actually just get it. You've got me there. I believe it's just rightsadvocacyproject.org.
Nice and That's easy. Right.
And then, yeah, if you navigate to the criminal justice section on the website, that'll take you to the reports, the most recent one there.
Lovely. Denham, thanks a lot, and we're hoping to have you back soon. Thank you very much.
Yeah, would love to come on again. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
On International Women's Day, we're hitting the streets because women are still fighting for the respect, wages and safety we deserve. The march takes place on Thursday, 6th of March at 5:30 p.m, departing the State Library. We welcome all cis and trans women and anyone who stands in solidarity against gender-based injustice. International Women's Day is about radical change, demanding the changes we need for safety, respect and equality. RSVP at iwd25.com.au for updates. Victorian Trades Hall Council is a 3CR supporter.
Jolt Arts and Australia Japan Foundation presents Otomo Yoshihide, Tomomi Adachi and Noise Scavengers, and Umanari Trio. Thursday, March 13 at Northcote Social Club. Witness Japan avant-garde legend and guitarist Yoshihide craft beautiful auditory worlds spanning genres and sonic terrain. Supported by collaborative projects Umanari Trio and Tomomi Adachi and Noise Scavengers. With interstitial DJs Annalie Koenig and Christy Monfries. For tickets, visit jolted.art, a 3CR supporter.
Come down to Camp Anarchy, 8th to the 10th of March, 2025, for a chance to connect with community and commune with nature. Join us for workshops and music at the beautiful Camp Eureka site in the Yarra Valley. Bring your ideas for an egalitarian First Nation and worker-centred future free of capitalist oppression. Workshop proposals welcome. Contact info@campanarchy.org. Camp Anarchy is a 3CR supporter.
March the 5th marks Dissociative Identity Disorder Awareness Day, and this year, 3CR is bringing you an afternoon of informative conversations on trauma and dissociation. Survivors of severe childhood trauma living with dissociative disorders have been cruelly dehumanized and misrepresented for many decades in media and medical systems, while struggling to survive and live with the legacies of their traumas. Listen to survivors, advocates and activists bringing you honest perspectives on these issues. March the 5th, 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. on 3CR.
Celebrate all that unites us and host your own Feast for Freedom this autumn. Cook delicious global recipes curated by refugees and our guest chefs, and come together with your friends, family and community while raising vital funds for people seeking asylum. Register now at feastforfreedom.org.au. The Asylum Seeker Resource Centre is a 3CR supporter.
The war on Palestine has not stopped. Palestinians need self-determination. Gaza must be free of Israeli occupation forces, have unconditional access to aid and reconstruction. 17 years of Israeli siege must end.
The West Bank needs the violence and attacks by the Israeli army and settlers to stop, and an end to the occupation and apartheid.
Your support to end the war on Gaza to bring peace, justice and freedom to all of Palestine is needed more than ever.
Join the rally on Sunday the 23rd of March, 12 noon, outside the State Library on Swanson Street.
With Netanyahu and Trump threatening to ethnically cleanse Gaza and annex the West Bank, we all need to stand up and say no.
Rally, Sunday the 23rd of March, midday at the State Library.
With your support, Palestine will be free, from the river to the sea.
Free Palestine Melbourne is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back with the Doing Time show, and you just heard an extended interview with Denham Sadler from Liberty Victoria's Rights Advocacy Project, talking about a new report which raises significant human rights concerns with Victoria Police search powers and calls for urgent reforms. Coming up now, we're going to be speaking with another very special guest, who is Brett Collins from Justice Action. He's the coordinator of Justice Action, and he's going to be talking to us and giving us some updates about a conference that he's attended. Hello, Brett. Welcome.
Yes, good afternoon, Marissa.
Lovely to have you. And yeah, we did speak a lot about police powers previous to this interview, Brett. It's pretty crazy.
Yes, it's a big issue, mate, a big issue, and so Victorian police certainly have something to be pretty ashamed about, actually.
Absolutely. Now, you haven't been on for a while, so I'm just wondering, can you give a little bit of a brief overview of Justice Action in case there are new listeners?
I guess our focus is really looking at authority generally and abuse of authority. So, you know, police interests are one of ours, but also issues of in psychiatric institutions, the use of forced medications is a very important issue for us, and both out in the community and also for people who are under some sort of an order. So they're the sort of things in which we're very much engaged. But we've just come out of an inquiry before the Senate, where they're looking at the issue of youth justice, and we've just been following that through, and as part of that, went to a conference in Thailand. So that was really what I've just come out of just now.
Perfect. So you actually went in as a Community Justice Coalition representative. Can you tell us about the conference?
Well, sure. Actually, it was really, it's run by this organisation called the International Corrections and Prisons Association. It's really, it's the most significant organisation run by the prison authorities themselves. Based in Belgium, it's been supported by both France and Canada, so those governments are paying. And the intention is really to be a bit of a chance to look at new things, new research, better ways of dealing with people and having better outcomes. So that's really the intention of it. And so they deliberately move the conference around from some places in Europe into Africa, into Asia, and in this case it was actually in Thailand, where the Minister for Prisons and the Commissioner General, whatever he was, they began to welcome, and about 350 people came from all over the world, 50 countries represented, and so it was a nice chance to see what people are doing, particularly on technology in prisons.
Okay, so tell us about technology in prisons, because I know that Justice Action has been doing a lot of stuff about that, particularly as follow-up after the Youth Justice Senate inquiry and getting computers into cells.
Well, that's right. Well, look, we're just most concerned to make sure that there's the opportunity that's being used to or is available to break down the isolation of imprisonment through technology, like we're talking about telecommunications, access to phone calls in cells, and access to education, all those things happening in cells. That those things actually go through fully. Because what's not very widely understood is that what was previously available to people in cells, access to things like typed up notes and just information generally from education institutions, they're no longer available. And education institutions these days expect everyone to have access to the internet so they can download things themselves and then respond up on the internet. So people in prison have been disadvantaged by the use of technology. And so instead of getting hard copies of things, they aren't available. So there's an expectation by education institutions these days that everyone has access to the internet. And prisoners have been disadvantaged. So that's really the key to it. And so what we're fighting hard to do is not only to recover the things we had before, but to, in fact, to break down the isolation of imprisonment even more. And so the whole range of things follow, and most importantly, there's increasingly there's an acceptance that people in prison, people in detention, people whether in psych hospitals, wherever they are, have to have access to a computer in their cells, access to information, access to hold information, to respond to court documents, to research things, and also to respond and to have video calls. So they're all the things that we were chasing hard in Thailand. And I came back with a lot of information now about things that we can do better here in Australia.
So in is that happening in Thailand, Brett?
No, look, in Thailand, it's not. That's the silly thing. In fact, look, our particular interest in Thailand was only really the issue of technology. Although we did have access to, like, we could have gone into to an inspection of a major maximum security prison.
That would be very, very interesting. I was being a little bit sarcastic there.
Yeah, so look, I've actually seen them before. I saw women's jail where I was a few years ago. So that's certainly not special, I can assure you. But socially, it's actually not as bad as one might expect. Like even the Bali Nine, I think they were reluctant to return to a high security prison here in Australia. At least there's a sort of social interactions a bit more relaxed than in Bali, even though some of the other conditions aren't so good. So it's just interesting from a prison's point of view, whether in fact a third world country isn't a better place to do your time. Technology really is an international issue, and so Europe is really driving it very solidly, and of course America. So just knowing what is available and ensuring that the wins we've had so far, in particularly in New South Wales and increasingly in Victoria, that those wins are ones which do give us access to the things to which we're entitled. Like, for example, counselling in cells, and video counselling, video calls, and also most importantly, keyboards. So at the moment, we are actually running quite a strong campaign to make sure that they don't give you just a tablet. And a tablet, we just use two fingers. You only get two fingers. What happened to the other eight fingers? Where my eight? I used to have 10 fingers, and they don't give me two only in a tablet. They're the sorts of arguments that we're having to run to make sure that that people are not limited, and like unfairly limited, in the sorts of resources that they will end up having in a cell. Access to access to good resources, access to whitelisted websites, have a proper screen, a keyboard, all the things in which we are fully engaged now.
So the import model has been accepted where, Brett?
Computers and cells, have they been accepted? For example, here in New South Wales, you do have access to a range of whitelisted websites. Things like Aboriginal Medical Services, certain education websites are now available. And so they're limited, but they're there. And they've now established quite carefully the rules which allow certain websites to be seen and other ones not. And so that's interesting too, because it's not just a matter of discretion in the hands of the guards. It's a matter of whether the websites themselves are limit, for example, messaging through the website and things like that. So there's some things there in place which will be useful in the future, and of course, most importantly, having video calls in your cells, so you can actually then see your children while you're in the cell, see your children, say goodnight to your wife, see your friends. They're the things that now are achievable. And we've come back with some very, very strong information about how these things can be run, costs and goes and that sort of stuff as well.
So video calls in cells are going to be, will be beginning with counselling and restorative justice and education? Is that right?
Well, that's right. Yes. Well, there are three issues which are the obvious ones. So, like, it means, for example, I'm looking particularly at youth justice, which is an area which is just amazing.
Yeah.
You're spending over $1 million a kid to lock them in a cell. $1 million a kid. Ha ha. No, $140,000 for an adult. And the kids' cell is the same. You have to shake your head and wonder where the other $800,000 is going. We're asking those questions, actually. We're asking the Auditor General in each of the states and territories to justify where the money's going, and not giving services to the kids as well. So now they're the things that we're pushing, and we'll win. But adults, of course, currently in some states, I know the ACT has been running for now about 17 years, has had access to computers in their cells with access to emails and things like that. They're coming in now to New South Wales, and some limited other prisons, particularly I think in Victoria, some of the private prisons have access to emails. We're not very happy with the costs engaged with that. That's something we still have to negotiate. But at least there are some services coming in.
Well, look, Justice Action has been campaigning and fighting for this for a really long time.
Well, it's, I guess it's over 20 years, actually, since we took the first 100 computers into some of the prisons here in New South Wales. They were donated, actually, from a charity, and we were told we had unlimited computers, which meant we got some up into Queensland and into New South Wales about the year 2000, actually. But since that time, we've made some headways. Definitely have made some headways. But it's obvious that if you have an ability to make phone calls, then to have a phone call from a cell is only a jump away. And then if you're in your cell most of the time, it's sort of quite obvious that you should be able to use that time properly. So they're all the. Yeah, they're really human rights these days, and access to law, access to a computer so you can save all your documents and send things out to the courts and things like that. There are levers there where you can have rights, legal rights, and so courts these days will actually support your legal rights, your claim to rights too. So we're definitely making significant headway, and I would expect in Victoria video calls very close to being seen as being natural, and a whole lot of things will follow from that. Of course, counselling is an important part of it. So people can have a chance to learn new skills and maybe even to prepare for release. So you can then maybe manage your life a bit better. Deal with your wives who are estranged or children who misbehave and have a few skills to handle it, and also learn skills to maintain yourself. Why shouldn't you learn how to do art or music? Mm. Why can't you do those things in the cell? You can, of course you can. And they're the sort of things that we are driving to make sure we achieve.
I think what I find a little bit concerning, and I'm sure this will be worked out, is what about young people, any adult as well, who comes from a non-English speaking background, or Aboriginal people where English is their second language? Who's going to provide the money to train people on computers?
Look, in some ways, that's actually one of the benefits, would you believe? Because, you see, what they're going to have is we'll have access to, every person will have access then to a computer in some sort of form. And some of them will be easier than others. So the same issue comes for older people as well. They're having trouble learning how to use a computer. But these, when you get out in the community, you have to learn these things. And so to open up to the benefits of having a computer in a cell and spend your time to learning the skills and gaining new skills, that's a very exciting thing. And to prepare that, prepare for your release and doing that, rather than sitting back waiting for the release date, you've got a chance to use your time properly and even to earn money while you're still just serving time. There's no reason why you can't use your personal time in your cell to earn money if it's art, or it could be composing something, it could be writing, it could be even doing somebody's accounts, who knows? Run a business, you can run a business, in New South Wales you can run a business out of your cell, as long as it doesn't conflict with corrective services, the possibilities are endless as soon as you have access to telecommunications and then a chance to link up then to an outside community organisation. So if you're, you don't speak English and you have limited abilities in certain sorts of ways, the chance to have an external service provider teaching you and using that video counselling ability specific to your needs is special. There's no way you can have something unique and specific to your culture replicated inside the prison. But if you have access to one, to a community organisation outside, giving you external counselling using that, what they call the import model, by importing the services, that's a very, very important thing that it's a great extension.
It really is, Brett. I mean, you went in February, didn't you?
I beg your pardon, sorry.
What dates were the conference?
I was in February. It was only, I actually came back on Thursday, so I've just only come back. I haven't even finished the report yet.
Wow, so it's fresh.
So there we are.
I'll have to talk to you again. So, I mean, I know you haven't written the report. Can you give us just a little bit of a rough outline, if you like, of what came out of the conference?
Well, look, the conference was all about technology, and they used the term smart prisons. Smart prison, I picked up that sort of way and said, excuse me, you can't have a smart prison. That's an internal contradiction. A prison is actually destructive. People who go to jail do worse than people who don't go to jail, even for the same behaviour. So we've got a lot of statistics to say that prisons are not smart, right? They're stupid. Right, and so that was the starting point. But they had a lot of things there in the conference. It wasn't only just giving access to rehabilitation services in the prisons. It was also things like, for example, how do you have locks right on cell doors which don't require a screw to open the door for you? That's an interesting idea.
Wow.
So what they're trying to do is actually cut out the prison officers and manage so it doesn't. You have less staff on board, you have less of those aggressive staff, and you have more, and then you can presumably deal better with a different sort of person. So interesting conversations about what that would entail. And the prison officers were saying, well, I mean, one of the few opportunities you have to socialise with the prisoners is when you open the door with your key. They open the door and say, good morning, sir. I had to laugh and I heard that one. Oh, come on.
Was that a joke or what?
Yeah, well, you'd think it would be a joke, but they were actually serious. The trouble is there's a whole other conversation happening in these conferences, and they're not grounded at all. They tell lies and they think because most times they're talking to each other, they can get away with it. But they got the laugh, I can assure you. They had some good, strong answers given at all stages. So now we made sure that our presence was felt at the conference, and we definitely walked away with quite a few major benefits and a bit of a vision for the future.
Well, that's fantastic, and I'm really glad that, you know, with this conference, the technology conference, that prisons were able to be included.
Absolutely. Well, that was we made sure that it was front and centre, and they did listen, and we won. The most important things we've won are access to external services, which is called the import model, and we will get keyboards out of this as well, keyboards and decent screens. So I think that'll all follow, and it'll come in pretty fast.
And I'm hoping that the rest of Australia, including Victoria and Queensland and all the other states,
Absolutely. No, we're monitoring what's happening in Victoria too, and we can see it happening all the time, actually. The development's happening in different to the jails. So I know they're running pilot programs in some of the jails. I think Barwon's one of them, and Ravenshall, I think. But there are quite a few things happening there too, which is being replicated all around Australia at the moment. So we're keeping a bit of an eye on what's happening in other jurisdictions. And of course, the ACT. The ACT's had computers in their cells for 17 years, so we're making sure that they are much more effectively used than they have been in the past.
Brett, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's lovely to have you and do a bit of an extended interview with you today.
Beautiful. Lovely to talk with you, Marissa.
You too, Brett, and we'll stay in touch.
Beautiful. Okay.
Thanks a lot.
See you then. Okay.
The law is part of our everyday lives, including when we buy something, use a service, have a job, or rent a house. The law can be used to help protect and support families when there is violence in the home or disputes over parenting arrangements. Sometimes we might need to understand the law to navigate specific government systems like Centrelink, getting a residency visa, or if we come into contact with the police. Community legal centres provide free, quality legal advice and assistance to help people with everyday legal problems. We focus on working with people who are experiencing disadvantage, such as financial hardship, family violence, homelessness, and discrimination. Community legal centres are independent, non-government organisations and can be found across Victoria and Australia. If you're experiencing a legal problem, your local community legal centre may be able to help. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres Victoria at www.fclc.org.au. A 3CR supporter.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
This federal election may decide the fate of native forests and the fate of billions of creatures who are dependent on the forest for habitat. Their fate is in your hands. Join us at the March in March for Forests on Sunday the 23rd of March. Rally outside MP Peter Khalil's office, 466 Sydney Road, Coburg, at 10:30 a.m. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring your homemade signs and be a part of protecting this vital ecosystem. March for Forests, Sunday the 23rd of March. Head to marchforforests.org for more information. Bob Brown Foundation is a 3CR supporter.
CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Tuesday, March 11th is a National Day of Action against nuclear. This upcoming federal election, we are seeing a toxic push to go nuclear. It is up to us to be loud and clear that nuclear is not safe, not ever, not here, not anywhere. Join us as we take to the streets to mark the 14th anniversary of the Fukushima disaster. Fukushima, never here, nuclear, never safe. Tuesday, 11th of March at 5:30 p.m. at the State Library. Old Country Calling is a 3CR supporter.
This is stolen land. It doesn't belong to the Liberal Party. It doesn't belong to the Greens. It doesn't belong to the Labor Party. It belongs to Aboriginal people.
And this is Marissa, and it's the Doin' Time Show. It's approximately 4:53. And I wanted to thank both our guests, Denham Sadler and Brett Collins, for coming onto the show. And it's goodbye from Marissa. Stay tuned every Monday 4 till 5pm for the Doin' Time Show, and we'll be now going out with our theme song Blackfella, Whitefella by the Rumpy Band. Take care. Bye.
Please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.